today on Know How.
Maybe you want to be a game streamer. We're going to help you do that.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Know How is brought to you by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by Avnet. Avnet and Not Impossible Labs created a historic event at the Life is Beautiful Music Festival, a first of its kind live concert that helped the deaf and hearing communities experience music in a whole new way. Visit avnet.com/music1 to see the journey. Welcome to Know How, the post-Halloween edition. It's really echoey in here. You probably can't hear that, but I sounded a lot more demonic than I probably did to you, Sam Iskovich from Ars Technica. How are you doing today?
Demonically is how I'd say, yes.
Did you dress up for Halloween? Who are you?
I went as explosive device.
Oh, wow. That sounds so daunting.
I went for the too soon route.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations. And successful? Like, were people scared of you at least?
Oh, yeah. I was disinvited pretty quickly from the homes I went to.
Okay. All right. That makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah. I was Bowser. I was a 6'8" tall Bowser. And I was also disinvited.
Great. How many minutes are we into this before you started bragging about your height? When we're far away, see, even now, if you notice, the television is arranged such that my height is just beneath Jason's on the video stream. I don't think that's a coincidence.
If I was bragging, this would be how I would stand for the entire show. Mm. But I'm not going to do that to you. No, we're not talking about height today, although we are talking about things that make for an engaging live stream. I don't know if talking about how tall you are actually qualifies, but I would say that probably one of the, if not the most popular kind of types of live streaming video content right now, and I will also personally admit I'm still very unfamiliar with it on an entertainment standpoint, is video game streaming. Everybody's doing it, right? Like, seriously, this is huge. There's big money to be made in being a video game streamer. It's almost like anyone who's a fan of video games, this is a channel for them, right?
I would say that if we're going to call the series Know How Gaming, it is incomplete without talking about sharing gaming on the internet.
Yeah.
There are so many different ways to do so, from just making a clip to send to your friends all the way up to building an audience of thousands of people who want to watch you regularly kick butt at either a new or old video game. It's become huge just because the confluence of everything else about gaming has coincided with creating and sharing video of the games that we love. So it's a really cool opportunity to talk about that sort of ecosystem around gaming that just kind of organically popped up. It wasn't really game companies that necessarily said, oh, video game streaming is going to be a thing. It's a lot of different tools and things popped up organically, and gamers said, yeah, I want this. And everybody else just started following suit.
Do you really have to be a really good gamer in order to pull this off? I mean, could you be spectacular for how bad you are at gaming and live stream it and people would watch? Or do people only want to watch people that are really good?
I mean, I can, just to start out, talk about what I engage with when it comes to watching other people play on the internet.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago when a guy by the nickname of Ninja, I want to say Taylor Blevins, I'm messing that up, so I'm already losing nerd points. But he streamed with a dude named Drake. Playing the game Fortnite, and
having seen
anything about that, I thought, I'm just going to tune into Twitch and watch. And kind of early on, before he was followed by every single person in the world, he was creating some pretty engaging content in terms of being good at the game and engaging a conversation among people who liked him. He was really good at handling all of the crazy high-end play of a game like Fortnite and also talking to people who had that in common, whether it was talking about the game specifically or about similar interests, even sometimes playing advice columnist. And then on top of that, there's other people who take older games. I'm 37, so I fit into that niche of having grown up with Nintendo Bleeps and Bloops as my lullaby music. So having an opportunity to watch old games I love born anew by great players, by speedrunners, by glitch hunters, I find that really interesting. It's a really interesting way for me to veg out. Instead of watching sports, instead of watching reality TV, I'll turn on sites like Twitch or Mixer or YouTube Gaming and dive into specific games that are either modern or classic that I have an interest in to see people play them well, kind of like how people will watch football because they played it in high school and they know how it works and they get excited when they understand, oh, that very, very good person just did a really good thing. I get that by watching people speedrun Super Mario Brothers 3.
And I think that's there's a gulf there between, like, at least for me, right? Like, I get the football. I've watched a lot of football in my lifetime, and I understand getting really excited about that. I was a video gamer as a child and into my teens and early 20s, but this idea of, like, watching it as a spectator sport is really, you know, really came along a little bit later. So for me to sit down and casually watch someone play a video game, there's a connection that's missing there unless I'm sitting in the living room with that someone making fun of them while they're doing their thing. You know, like, that's the connection that I have. But that's so far outside of where we are now. It is a spectator sport. I mean, it's blown up. It's crazy. There's so much money being made off of this. Now, you threw out three different services, so we might as well kind of talk about those, because when you're talking about live streaming gaming, it really does seem like there are three major services. Obviously, the big one in the room is Twitch, not Twit, but Twitch, it's just ginormous. And kind of talk a little bit about the back history here. I know Justin TV, didn't this come out of Justin TV?
That's right. I was just going to say Justin.tv was the original site, which was just about streaming content live. I specifically remember Justin.tv being just a haven for illegally streamed soccer.
Right.
But there were so many different use cases for it. But it turned out that the gaming side was embraced really heavily, and they just spun off Twitch.tv as its own separate site to just take all that content and squish it together and make it easier to search for specific things, people who you like to watch, or games. You know, just being able to manage, like, I love the game Dota 2 is something someone might say. I've got, you know, my own opinions on that. But you can go and search for that specific game. You can search for class games. You type Mario and you can pull up all of the different kind of Super Mario games that might be being played at any given moment. Once we got a lot of people interested in it, then it was about, okay, this might be worth some money. And sure enough, I want to say $970 million that Amazon paid. I can't remember if that was just all cash or a mix of cash and stock, but, you know, they threw that money down a while back. And ever since, Amazon integration with Twitch has been pretty heavy duty. If you pay for Amazon Prime, that, well, I want to say $120 subscription fee for free shipping and all these other perks, well, Twitch.tv gives you some perks as well. You'll be able to claim free video games. You'll be able to claim discounts and free subscriptions and things like Twitch-specific things that you get when you're already paying for Amazon Prime. So that has brought a lot of people into just even paying attention to what Twitch is, let alone getting hooked on it.
Yeah, not just the gaming side of things. And I think this is probably going to be pretty standard across some of these other ones that we're going to talk about. Twitch is amazing for game streaming, but what is gaming is a very wide definition, right? Some people are watching movies and live, you know, talking through them as they're watching, not showing the movie in the live stream, but kind of making a game out of that. Some of these streams have absolutely nothing to do with gaming at all. Wide gamut. It's just all live content specifically. Why is Twitch so popular? What makes it so attractive for people who are looking for these games being streamed online? Is it just the sheer massive amount of people, like 9.7 million daily active users? That's a lot of users getting on there and communicating with each other while they're watching these games.
I mean, if you are trying to get eyeballs, you need to be at a place that has a guaranteed audience of folks who understand that it is live play as opposed to recorded play, and that they can engage with it in terms of chat rooms. Twitch had those two things down before anybody else did, and that means if you essentially want to make sure that someone searching for a certain game is going to find you, you're going to want to be on the biggest site. So Twitch has that first mover advantage. That's really about it. They've clearly been working to add more functionality, add more options as time has gone on. And that's not a thing I'm necessarily a big expert on, every single thing that Twitch has gotten right or offers for content creators. Right. But in terms of managing a chat room, in terms of letting you archive and host clips of recent things that you've done. I mean, the clips functionality is a biggie, and they were early with that because they recognized that people wanted to take these little moments from a stream, 30 seconds of something crazy happening and everyone laughing or cheering, and make that easy to share. Clips were a really big part of, I'm not saying that's the exact reason that Twitch is huge, but there's just a lot of little things that they've made sure to build while continuing to enjoy that first mover advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. Chat moderation, like in kind of looking through the site and seeing just the sheer number of people that end up in these rooms while watching it. Like, it's crazy to see that chat moving. And obviously when you're watching someone who has an insane follower count, it can get a little, unmanageable. They've been doing a lot around that, like you said, the introduction of rooms to help with that overcrowding in chat to kind of cut that down. But Twitch, it seems like it's really easy to stream directly from the Xbox One and the PS4 directly to Twitch. Twitch being the main kind of destination for this stuff, there's a lot of integration and a lot of different technologies that work directly with it. So that's going to help as well when people think that they want to do it. Hey, what do you know? My system is already designed to work with this. It's going to make it easier to decide, this versus that. Now, YouTube gaming, which is kind of in flux right now, right? Like, YouTube gaming was a thing for a while, probably since I think 2015. And then there was an announcement earlier this year, probably in September, I think, a few months ago, that basically said they're shifting strategies early next year in 2019 to kind of integrate it within YouTube itself instead of being a separate destination, right?
Correct. They, YouTube changes its plan every 9 months,
Cool.
So whatever they announce, don't bank on it being forever. I think they just recognized that people were not going to this gaming.youtube.com URL and starting their search there. People were just on YouTube, just normal YouTube, picking for their favorite things and found, well, let's just take advantage of the fact that more of our eyeballs are there and get that live content shown to those people, both the ones who are already interested in the tech and streaming and live gameplay and those who have no idea. And I think what was happening was that they were not growing the audience. They were not getting people who might be slightly curious about live streaming to pop onto the gaming.youtube. There was that sort of sequestering of that content. And someone at Google said, let's not break that apart. We're not going to be like Justin.tv, where we take the gaming and put it off to its separate little portal and do better as a result. They were not showing those numbers. I mean, that's only a guess. I don't have an insider over YouTube, but that would be my guess about that. Mm-hmm. But when you have that kind of default audience of people searching for a video game thing and going to YouTube, it's easy to find content at YouTube that supports live chat, that supports Twitch-like features like clips. It's basically just been kind of a copy, but it works. So that's what you can get. You can already just in general look around on YouTube for live events. Your average live blog from a company like Google or Apple, Nintendo announcing stuff for new video games like Animal Crossing and Smash Brothers. There are a lot of companies, E3 in particular, had a giant YouTube landing where people would go to YouTube or Twitch and watch live content. So sequestering that was kind of dumb. But ultimately, YouTube has a lot of really good back end for serving video very quickly in a really clean way and making it easy to show or hide chat. I'm not an expert on which site has better auto moderation, but I imagine Google has a vested interest in using its machine learning and applying it to making chat cleaner and more efficient and less crazy for viewers. So there are a lot of people who prefer YouTube gaming and go to it and have audiences that prefer going there primarily because it makes it that much easier to archive. Mm-hmm. Once you've done a YouTube gaming stream, boom, you've created an archive. Twitch does not make that quite necessarily a default. Sometimes you have a time limit for how long a video is archived, or you have to go through an extra hoop, and YouTube's like, no, we are designed for archiving and saving video and having people go to it all the time. So I would say that's sort of the coolest thing about YouTube gaming.
Yeah, which is just so nuts when you think about how much video, and not just YouTube gaming, but YouTube in general, how much video they're storing on a second-by-second basis. And then you take live streaming gameplay, which, I mean, these sessions can go for 5, 6, 7, 8 straight hours, and it's just being saved all, you know, without having to think about it. That's a huge advantage for YouTube over Twitch, where you actually have to go in there and decide, this is a moment from that video I want to save. Instead, YouTube's like, no, we just give you everything. That's the way we do it at YouTube. So a lot of value there. DVR function, obviously. And if you have an Android device, you can stream your gameplay from your Android device. I don't know if it works the same way with iOS, but I know you can do it on Android. That's the platform I have. And so they make it kind of easy to stream from your phone if you're playing a mobile game directly to the interface. Apparently, there's no Xbox One direct streaming with YouTube gaming, but then there's that. But speaking of Xbox, Microsoft has Microsoft Mixer. Safe to say this is kind of the lesser of the three, lesser known of the three. It's certainly the one that I've heard the least about. But, you know, it's a Microsoft property, so it's not no small potatoes. But what can you tell us about Microsoft Mixer? And what is the reaction here?
Mixer is a platform that began as Beam.pro, just another company that was doing its own thing, that was advertising its specific boons, and superior video quality was one big push that they had essentially just worked out how to get live gameplay to look crisper on the fly and to reduce the lag. So when you're playing, when you're streaming something on Twitch in particular, you're waiting on an average 4 to 7 seconds of delay between you doing a thing in a game and it appearing for your viewers. And that can create some problems if you're trying to directly communicate with fans. And so depending on the game, something that mix that kind of Mixer direct minimal latency solution is pretty ideal. Now, there are actually games where you kind of want to have a delay so that someone is like watching your stream and then trying to kill you in a game, looking you up. And there are popular streamers who have to deal with those kind of stream campers. Who are watching just to get the kill, just for the lulz. Hmm. So you can change that on Mixer on a game-by-game basis. But having that as an option is really cool. Microsoft just announced a Mixer 2.0 initiative. It's Season 2 is what they're calling it. I find that sort of strange that they're calling it a different season since it's just continuing. Like, it's just you're logging into Mixer. What makes it a Season 2? But they're definitely still trying to find ways to make it stand out just in general. In terms of being a smoother experience, of having a smoother interface, but there's just not as many people there. Yeah. So if you like Xbox One games, Mixer integrates with Xbox One really well. And now that Xbox One X is proving to be the quote-unquote best console on the market in terms of adding more power whether you're playing in 4K or not, Red Dead Redemption 2 in particular has stood out as a very good Xbox One X game. And Mixer just plays really nicely with anything that's being played on Xbox One, Xbox One S, and Xbox One X. Ugh, that's a lot of systems. And that's not a small advantage for those kind of games. But depending on the game you like, when you log into Mixer, you are going to find fewer people playing and fewer people watching. So on the one hand, if you are brand new to streaming, you might be able to stand out just by going to Mixer and being allegiant to that community that is there, that is watching directly on their Xboxes, that is enjoying these sort of perks and points that accumulate. Like, you just get points and things that you can spend just by watching. So by being a participant, you get these little blips and bits that I believe can be given to streamers to pay them or to at least put in votes. It's a weird gamification thing. But, you know, Twitch doesn't do anything of that sort. So Microsoft is trying. It's a solid platform. I like how things look in Mixer. I like the interface. I think it's really smooth. I think they're definitely the best technology platform for live streaming, but not by a giant margin. Ultimately, going to Mixer is really going to be about is your favorite game or your favorite personality on that site.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing that's pretty important, and I believe this is a differentiator between the two, is that the Microsoft Mixer experience, as a broadcaster, you don't need third-party broadcast software. On a PC anyways. It's kind of integrated into the experience, so you have everything you need to kind of get going on some of the other platforms, and we're going to talk about it in the second segment. It's, you know, if you want a stream that's anything more than just maybe a screen of gameplay, maybe you want to, you know, superimpose yourself on the back of it with like a green screen sort of compositional sort of thing, you're going to need extra software to do that. It seems like here you kind of have the basics already built into the software, into the site, so you don't need that extra stuff. And for some people, that's going to be exactly what they need to just get into it. And maybe they expand from there. One question I have is about Facebook and Twitter, because obviously, you know, the social sites have their own live streaming capabilities, but they're not focused on game streaming. Is anyone making any money streaming their gameplay on Facebook and Twitter, or is that kind of an exception?
I don't know a ton about what Facebook is doing, other than the fact that they have been going to events promoting the crap out of Facebook gaming. They want people to think of Facebook as a place where you can go and watch live streams of gaming and interact with those personalities. Facebook does have a live event interface already good to go. I know there's a lot of places that will just use Facebook to stream events, but it's not better than the other sites. I really don't see anything about Facebook gaming that makes me say, oh, cool, unless you're really attached to your Facebook credentials and your Facebook details. If you're the kind of person who loves giving all of your information to Facebook so that they can narrow down their advertising on you, then Facebook gaming is good for you. I'm not a giant fan of that, and they haven't really announced features that to me make much sense for either people who watch games being played or who stream them to go to Facebook gaming. It's there, but there's not a lot of people. I feel like they're actually paying people to just go onto Facebook and say, come on, well, you know, show people what's happening. Twitter, don't even bother. There's just very little there. That's not an interface that's designed for chat and for a lot of the features that are really important that are built into the other three big platforms that we already talked about. The best you can do is hook up links from those other sites to Twitter. And I just want to point out, since we talked about it, iOS Replay Kit is going to let you connect your iPad or iPhone to all of the major streaming platforms where you can put in credentials for those sites. Very so nice. You had talked about that possibly being limited for YouTube gaming. Don't worry about that. If you have an iPhone, iOS device, you are good to go with all three of the biggies.
Cool. That's coming soon to an iOS device near you. Let's take a break and then thank a sponsor, and then we'll get into kind of some of the technical requirements behind this, what kind of software you might want to use, what kind of hardware you might want to use to make your streams look good and to be a game streamer. But before that, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How, and that is DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean actually provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications using droplets, virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. So you can choose from standard or CPU-optimized droplets, and then, of course, customize from there, make them your own. DigitalOcean is designed for developers, has an easy-to-use control panel and API that lets developers spend more time coding, which is what they really want to be doing, and less time managing their infrastructure. Industry-leading price to performance as well. Access the compute resources that you need at the lowest rates. That'll save you up to 55% when compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you're going to pay per month because there's a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. And you also get included at no additional cost, 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise class SSDs, and an easy to use API. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean, and that's to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry leading price performance. So you can sign up today and check it out and receive a free $100 credit when you go to do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit, and you'll get a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of Know How. All right, so, excuse me, technical aspects of this. Obviously, we've got the sites, and we say, hey, this one sounds good. We're going to start streaming to Twitch, or we're going to start streaming to Mixer, whichever one you choose. There's a whole lot more to it than that. Like, what are you actually streaming? What is your source? Is it a console? Is it a PC? What are you using to kind of take that and put it all into one nice package to then serve out to the internet? So let's start with the game system itself. Obviously, this is going to really depend on what you plan on streaming, because people are streaming their mobile devices. They're streaming using a single computer to both run the stream and play the game. They're streaming consoles that are plugged in. This can get really complicated right out of the gate, right?
You're gonna need. Are we starting with computers or consoles?
Let's start with computers. Sure.
Yeah. So if you want to stream from a computer, you're gonna need a decent amount of juice.
Yeah.
Basically, a gaming computer. The good news is, so long as you have some RAM and processor to spare, you're fine. You are not going to be taxing your video card in a particular amount to get a good game stream going live. As in whatever game you are playing on computer, it's going to be more about making sure your processor has headroom, which they tend to do because most games are GPU limited, not CPU limited
Got it. These days. Okay.
So, and then get the RAM up there. You know, if you're going to probably want to get up to 16 gigs of RAM is my recommendation. You can get by with 8. 32 is overkill, but you just want to have that little bit of headroom in terms of processor and RAM, just because you're essentially pumping out that extra bit of data out. Your bandwidth is going to honestly be a bigger deal with all of this to make sure that you can upload. You're going to need a decent upload rate. We did just have a know-how episode about gaming and networking where we talked about specific things you'd want to have for your router, yeah, for your cable modem, and for your setup. All of that applies here. Things like buffer bloat absolutely matter when it comes to the latency issue of getting that stream stuff up as fast as possible, especially if you are streaming an online competitive game. So definitely check back with that know-how gaming episode about networking to kind of fine-tune that part of your rig. But in short, you're going to want to have a plan that guarantees good upload, and you're going to want to have the rest of your hardware set up for that. So Twitch has a recommendation in terms of specs for an Intel i5-4670 or equivalent. So that's going to be a dual core. I don't know exactly the speed, but they're all kind of at that certain level. If you were building a brand new gaming PC at this point, you can get away with, you know, I want to say a 2.8 gigahertz processor for something about that. And that's pretty affordable. And they say 8 gigs of RAM and that at least like Windows 7 or more or Mac. I would say get more RAM. There's always more. If you are streaming, you are adding more to your RAM pile. So I would say get more, get up to 16. But if you are just trying to get by, you should probably be okay with 8.
All right. And focus on the GPU is another component of that. And that would be with like a single computer. I mean, it gets more complex if you have multiple computers. Say you want to have one computer run the stream, one computer be the machine that you're using to play the games or whatever. I don't know if that makes things any less or more complicated. I would imagine
my feeling on that is that you are adding more complication to the process,
yeah,
by adding another computer. You are not helping yourself by reducing the load from one computer to streaming to another. I would argue if you are someone like Ninja, if you have thousands of people watching you all the time, if your income stream is dependent on game streaming, then yes, at that point you're going to want to have quite the rig. But you'd really at that point you'd need to have some redundancies in place.
Yeah.
You would need to have backup gaming computers and backup streaming computers and a whole nother backup networking situation. But then that's because you are making, you know, thousands of dollars a day streaming. At that point, you want to invest. And we're not necessarily talking to that high level. Just to understand, once you're making that money streaming on Twitch, you better invest it back into your setup, because at that point, when you lose an hour's worth of viewers on a subscriber night, on a night where people expect you to be live, that can be disastrous. But if you are just streaming casually, you're going to find people are a little bit more forgiving of those little blips, especially if it's just a minor blip in the stream.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you're streaming consoles, say you've got the Xbox One, you've got the PS4, you might not need to feed that into something else. A lot of times, like we were talking earlier, it seems like these integrations are kind of built in. You could stream directly from an app on your Xbox One or an app on your PS4, right?
That is correct. You can use both Xbox One and PlayStation 4, any version, doesn't have to be Pro or X or any of that. And you can feed in your credentials from services like Twitch and YouTube and on Xbox, Mixer. I actually don't know off the top of my head whether Mixer and PS4 play that nicely in terms of feeding in all the information on a PS4. I believe it is as simple as feeding in a specific URL in a pinch if you're not just putting in your credentials. But with Twitch, it is as simple as going to the share settings on both of those consoles. They're in the settings menus of these PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, and saying, this is my username and password, and then going through sort of a confirmation that that is you, and then bleep, 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 you can now stream. It's really that simple. The systems have enough memory and backend to manage that upload of your video, and even can put a chat interface in there in a pinch. But clearly, Xbox One X plus Mixer is the smoothest way to do that. They have built all that up so that you can stream and check out your chat and all this other stuff from the ground up, built into the OS of the Xbox One.
Do you happen to know, when you're streaming directly from a console in that way, is that just straight gameplay being fed and you can be heard in the background? Is that the player superimposed on top the way you sometimes see, or is that going to absolutely require some of this extra kind of production software that we're going to talk about in a second?
You're going to need production software for a lot of the bells and whistles. Yeah. Mixer makes it easy to plug in some sort of webcam. I don't know off the top of my head exactly what you can pipe in terms of webcam and exactly how you can configure. But both of those systems support webcams, and they both will work. You can use your PS4 with Twitch and the PlayStation Eye camera. That is the official Sony camera, and that will work. Whether that works with other webcams, I do not know off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure because of the USB ports on both systems that you can plug other stuff in and that it will work. Microsoft doesn't really have an official camera for the Xbox One other than the Kinect, and you don't need to have Kinect.
Yeah, yeah. All right. And then another thing, you know, you were talking earlier about consoles, but not current consoles, let's say ancient consoles. There's a lot of that happening. Are those people, do you think they're streaming from a PC in emulation of those games? I'm sure there's some of that, but I have to imagine some people are taking their actual consoles and doing some sort of conversion to bring them in and encode them and do it that way, right?
Absolutely. Elgato, E-L-G-A-T-O, is a company that makes the easiest to buy little rigs. They're capture cards, and they usually just work with USB. And they'll take an HDMI connection or sometimes an RCA connection, yellow, white, red, from external sources and pipe it into your computer to then be streamed from wherever. So systems like the Switch and the NES and pretty much everything in between can work with this stuff. You may need to go to greater lengths to get a better signal from your NES or even older system, because those have, they're built in with kind of crappy analog signals, and you want to get those nice and pristine for your digital feed. So something like the Elgato will kind of get you there on a lower quality, but you're going to be investing more in, for example, a FrameMeister device. That is Frame, M-E-I-S-T-E-R. That is a company that makes a lot of solutions that let you upconvert and get better footage from your older systems onto a modern computer, which you're going to need. So the Switch, all it supports is the ability to capture internally, like 30 seconds of video, by holding down the capture button. It's got a dedicated capture button. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't let you directly feed it to Twitch. That doesn't let you live stream. The Switch does not have that kind of processing overhead. If you're going to want to live stream, for example, the new Super Smash Bros. Ultimate later this year, you will need some sort of capture card. And thankfully, because Switch is HDMI, you can use one of the Elgato HDMI solutions, and you'll be just fine. But the older the system you go, the more you may wind up spending and setting up and configuring to get that old, old signal to look decent on a modern machine.
Right on. And I know for myself, I've been thinking, oh, well, you got to have, you know, if you want to be connecting this into a PC, you got to have like a desktop, one of those, you know, big rigs that we showed off a couple of episodes ago. I also happen to have the Lenovo Legion gaming laptop here right now, and I was playing around with it. And I mean, this goes up to a Core i7 processor. the size of the machine doesn't matter. It's really what's on the inside. But that seems like a really great solution for having mobile game streaming. I don't know how many people actually, you know, care as much about being able to be mobile while they're streaming their gameplay to these networks. But that's got to be a nice bonus to have. Or are people usually really locked down into their studio?
I mean, the main thing you're going to want is to guarantee a good connection. So yeah. Taking your laptop to a cafe and streaming Fortnite from there may not pay off if you are struggling to get a good connection to your game, let alone uploading to your viewers. So if your laptop has an Ethernet out, that is great. Or otherwise, just buy a little $20, $30 USB to Ethernet adapter for that sort of thing. That will make a difference. And other than that, like I'd said, you can get a lot of headroom out of pretty old processors and just have, you know, enough RAM. Just have enough RAM.
All right. So real quick, let's dive into kind of some of the software that you would use in order to make your streams look good. And I love this first one. I feel like I hear about it all the time. Open Broadcasting Software, OBS. People refer to it as OBS. And the beauty here is that this is free. This is open source. It's totally modular. It has all of these integrations built in, so it, you know, it's integrated support for Twitch, Mixer, and YouTube. What do you think? Have you ever had a chance to play around with this, or I don't know? What do you think? What have you heard?
I exclusively stream using OBS when I have to stream anything on the internet, and I can tell you two things. One, it's solid, and two, you get what you pay for. It is free. And OBS itself does not host its own tutorial. When you load up OBS, there is not just an incredible tutorial that tells you exactly how it works. It doesn't give you, Clippy doesn't show up and say, are you using Twitch or Mixer or YouTube? So you're going to have to hunt around. I would suggest Windows Central has a really solid beginner's guide. In fact, if you just do windowscentral.com/beginners-guide-OBS, that'll probably pop up on the screen in a second. In fact, I can copy and paste that for the Mac and Josh to check out real quick. That is a really useful guide because it's from this year and it breaks down some important things. Number one, which service are you using? Is it going to be Twitch or Mixer or YouTube? You can get a certain little bit of data from your profile from these other sites. Now, you have to go to the other sites and create a membership and all that. Well, once you do that, you'll get a little personalized key. And that tells Twitch or Mixer or YouTube Gaming exactly who you are as you start uploading the data. So it instantly feeds your upload to your password-protected account. So that is the first thing you're going to want to do. Then you're going to want to set up the games that you're streaming and your audio devices and your video devices. And at this point, it is a little bit of trial and error because you're creating separate little windows manually in order to, for example, have the gameplay footage in a giant place. Maybe you want it at the top right or centered or completely full screen. And then where are you going to put a webcam video of yourself if you want that? Are you going to put in some of the chat from your channel? Like if people like to chat and you want that to be visible next to your gameplay. If you want to go even bigger and do certain customizations like, oh, you've gotten a donation from a fan and you want to let the whole chat room know. And that is a big thing in terms of the monetization, which we will get to. OBS, you can make that. You can make that happen, but that is many more steps. So OBS is a starting free option that is solid for being a starter and free option, but it's only going to do so much. So you're either going to need to configure it yourself or you're going to want to look into dedicated software that might be paid and has better tutorials. Do you have a suggestion for one of those?
You know what? I think I do. There's one called XSplit that I hear a lot of people talking about, and this is absolutely a paid solution. Again, it seems like it's optimized with all the major services in mind. It also, points out that it has integration for Facebook and Twitter, hardware support with a lot of, you know, the common capture cards and cameras. And there is a free and a paid version on this as well.
Yeah, that's when you're paying for something like that, you might be paying more than you need to. If you get a month by month basis, that's cool. It looks like they can charge you $200 for a lifetime license. You could also pay $4 a month in a sort of trial way. So you have those sort of options to dip your toes in and see what benefits it offers you. I would suggest if you look at one of these OBS tutorials, start there, because if you just start streaming, you'll kind of know whether or not you want to keep doing it. I wouldn't just start investing money in streaming right away if you're brand new to this. Use OBS, use a tutorial, get started, just see what it's like. And then once you see what your limitations are, look at XSplit and other paid options to see whether those might get you what you want in terms of fancier customizations and other management.
Yeah, and kind of middle of the road is another piece of software I found called Game Show, which, see, it's less expensive. I think there is a free version, but it has a watermark that runs every 30 seconds. So apparently it can be a little annoying. Obviously, watermarks are there, and free versions, we're pretty used to that. But $29 would be the one-time fee in order to remove that and get the pro, you know, kind of the full version of this. But it sounds like it's kind of a little tricky. It's not the easiest software in the world to use, but it is an option if you want to do a paid version and try something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, the other components that you would need, mics, cameras, of which there are so many options, so it's really hard to kind of pull those out of the air. But let's start with mics real quick. I would imagine most gamers are going to have a gaming headset. Is that ample enough, or are we talking about like actual external microphone of better quality?
I think all in all, if you are taking this seriously, an external mic is a solid investment, even though gaming mics are designed with a lot of very fancy features. But, you know, right here, I've got this Hale guy with the, you know, the static, the screen here and the shock guard and all that sort of stuff. And I know at twit.tv, audio matters.
Yep.
So if you and audio really matters when you're in an explosive mix. You're going to want to fine tune how you sound. You don't want your voice being buried. Yeah. So anything you can do to brighten how your own voice sounds to, you know, amplify that sort of higher end frequency stuff, you don't want anything muffled. You don't want to lose any detail if you're trying to make your voice brighter in the audio mix. Like, that really does matter, getting your voice in a crazy gaming mix, because you still want people to listen to the action, but you don't want to get buried. So consider that a gaming headset can be enough, especially if you're just dipping your toes in. But absolutely, don't take long to upgrade yourself to an external mic if you decide, okay, I'm going to do this for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, as far as external mics are concerned, the Heil PR40, which is the mic that you have and that we have all throughout our studio, definitely a little expensive. It's like $300 to $350, right around in that area. Blue Yeti is a pretty familiar, well-known mic. I think the challenge with the Blue Yeti, and this is $130, the challenge with the Blue Yeti is that most people don't know how to speak into it. They speak into it as if it's a top address when it's really a side address. So keep that in mind. Even though it looks like you're supposed to talk directly into the dome, you're supposed to talk into the side of the dome. They don't do a really great job of pointing that out, or people don't do a really great job of reading the directions. But there you go. It's a great option for the money, $130. And if you aren't going to do that, another option, I actually happen to have this here in the studio, the Razer Siren X, which is, this is by the Razer brand. They have a whole series of kind of hardware designed for gamers and in this case for game streamers. So you can get something like this and just kind of plugs right in. You got your volume controls on the microphone. It's got a nice kind of profile to it. Makes it really easy to set up on a desktop and position it, you know, whatever way you need to get good audio. So and that's going to run you $99 on that. There you go. There's the Siren X. I believe I'm saying that correctly. And then camera-wise, the Logitech HD Pro C920, we actually have that in here. We recommend this here at Twit. We recommend the C920 all the time. I'll go ahead and put it on the overhead. This is just a fantastic webcam for HD video, and also because it doesn't cost a whole lot. This is like $49. They do have a $99 version of this camera that has integrated capability of like removing the foreground from the background. And so I imagine that would come in handy if you're game streaming and your software allows you to kind of cut out the background so it's just your head on top of the video. You see that a lot in gaming videos and live streaming. And I think the $99 version of this camera can do that for you. It's kind of integrated into the hardware That would be pretty handy, I would imagine.
I mean, basically, the webcam you're going for, you're going to want 720p at least. Yeah. Because, again, you're probably going to be a small chunk in the corner for the game stream you're doing. If you want to get up to 1080p, great. But it's really, I would not call that an essential thing resolution-wise. It's nice to have a little bit more headroom, but, you know, 720p is the minimum. But you want to make sure you're getting 60 frames a second out of that webcam, out of the software that it's going with. Because some of these older cameras that you might just dig up and go, oh, it's 720p, that's good enough, might have a 30 frames per second cap, which will be fine. But if you want to stream 60 frames a second, which is an option that you can toggle in OBS and all these others, you're going to want to do it because all of the gaming sites support that 60 frames per second cap, especially in these crazy online games where speed matters. It is a nice thing to be able to get up to that full frame rate. So look into that. I also wanted to point out a thing that you should look into when you're buying a mic. Look for mic stands and pop guards. You can get these for 15, 10 bucks a pop. They don't have to be that great, but they can make all the difference for making sure, like Jason said, that you've got your mic aimed at your mouth the right way and that you've got that little pop guard. As I go pop, 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 I hope that sounds okay. I've got this thing in here. This little part here is the cheapest part of the whole situation, and it makes a big difference in terms of speech. So definitely look into that a few bucks here and there.
Absolutely. Really good point. Thank you for pointing that out. Jared B's in the studio jumping up and down. He's like, yes, yes, yes.
Can I just point out, too, you said it was $10, $15. What was it?
A pop.
A pop. Right. I see what you did there. Thank you for pointing that out. I didn't give that nearly as much laugh as it deserved. Real quick before we move on, I thought this was kind of cool. Razer also has the Kiyo camera, $99. The cool thing about this, check it out. So it kind of has a cool view to it. You rotate it, and it's a ring camera. It's a ring light. So ring
that
light
is no small benefit. Having a ring that illuminates at the exact angle the camera is looking at. Yep. It isn't always perfect, but gosh, that's a nice freebie to have, especially if you're in a badly lit apartment.
Yeah, no, it really does make the difference. That's $99, and you can find that pretty easily, the Razer Kiyo. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to thank the sponsor of this episode, and then we're going to come back and talk about making money. Like, how are people making money doing this? Maybe we'll give you some ideas, and then you can throw some of your money our way. Just kidding. But speaking of throwing money our way, this episode of Know How is brought to you by Avnet. Now, Avnet is doing some really cool stuff. How does a groundbreaking technology incubator debut its latest idea for solving life's absurdities by leveraging an end-to-end ecosystem that turns ideas into marketable products? Not Impossible Labs, if you ever heard of it, had an idea for technology that could revolutionize live music. That's what you're going to see a little bit of here in video. The team wanted to bring the experience of a concert to a group who had traditionally found it totally inaccessible, the deaf community. No doubt, live music is something the hearing-abled take for granted. I know I've taken it for granted. It's such an incredible experience. It touches on all senses, and we're used to it in that regard. A challenge lies in making concerts and live music events more inclusive for the deaf, to bring them into that experience. With Avnet as their guide, their idea evolved to one of the most sophisticated wearables on the market, helping to bring a shared live concert experience to everyone. Called Music Not Impossible, it's a product that allows deaf and hearing concert goers alike to literally feel live music through advanced vibration technology, and they get to experience it together for the very first time. Those wearables, they actually are wearables. You wear them on your back, over your shoulders. In the strictest sense, they're wearables. You're wearing that vest, the components that send vibrations through the ankles, wrists, and chest. The hearing-abled receive music vibrations through their ears, of course, while attendees who are deaf and wearing these wearables receive those vibrations through other parts of their body, allowing many of them to respond to the live music alongside everyone else for the first time. For many, this was the first of its kind for them in their lives, an innovation that literally opens up a whole new world of music exploration to those who might not hear it in the way that the hearing-abled are used to hearing it. Avnet and Not Impossible Labs revealed Music Not Impossible at the Life is Beautiful Music Festival in Las Vegas, and it was a huge hit. And that's just the kind of innovation that was brought to the finish line because of Avnet. So visit avnet.com/music and then the number one. So avnet.com/music1. And you can see the journey for yourself. There's some videos on there, some descriptions and photos about the event and the wearables themselves. That's avnet.com/music1. And we thank Avnet for their support of KnowHow. All right, so let's spend a little bit of time here talking about the Mune. And specifically, I mean, I imagine there's so much competition here. It can be really difficult to find the audience because what you're hoping for as a game streamer, I imagine, is connecting with enough of an audience that that opens up avenues, that opens up doors for making money. So how exactly do you build an audience when there's just so many people out there doing the same thing?
You know, there are a lot of people who talk about how to do this. And I think like any advice about going for a big career, it is about a mix of hard work, luck, and really trying to find a right spot to sort of strike, find those opportunities that are not being exploited. So that gives you a few options when we're talking about game streaming. Number one, what are the new games? Maybe a game is brand new and nobody else is playing it yet. And you can look at that and go, oh, well, there's an opportunity potentially, or there's so many people who are going to be playing that or searching for it that I can get in and potentially make a splash. That is not necessarily the easiest path because, again, that's usually ends up with a gazillion other people. And what you find is with those biggest games, the popular streamers who've already done well with other games and are getting a little burnt out will switch. So you've got folks who are killing it at the game PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but they're finding audience fatigue and they see new entries. Call of Duty Black Ops 4 showed up kind of at the perfect time as people said, oh, I've watched a lot of PUBG. I like the idea, but I could use a little jolt. And Fortnite sort of showed up for that, but so did Call of Duty. And Call of Duty is a little more militaristic. Point being, that was a lot of the big names. So you as a new fish might not necessarily jump into either Call of Duty, where it's a gold rush, or go back to PUBG, where maybe some people are fleeing and you could find a void. You may really be better off looking for those modern games that have small audiences. So you could be the one person who is streaming that strange European game that you heard about that you have a big passion for, but that you're not seeing a lot of people talk about. You could be streaming something in virtual reality, and VR has kind of a niche thing going on by default where people are super interested in it but don't necessarily pay for it, or they're just curious about it from the outside. Mm-hmm. Or you could find a classic game that you see, well, nobody's really talking about that or playing that, but I see a hook. I see a reason why I could play that game and get somewhere with it. So you'll notice I've been talking about the games because it really is all about the games. You have to find a game that you love and that you're willing to play a lot and hope that other people watch, because you may not necessarily build an audience immediately. It may take you months of only having a few people log in at any given time. So if that opportunity comes from playing a classic game or an early access game or something that's in beta, something that people haven't heard about but might get big, you're really ultimately just trying to get your legs under you and build a community. Because the game you pick is about the fun you'll have, but it's also about helping you focus on the things like community and audience building, where you are going on to things like Facebook and Twitter and letting people know what time you're playing, your requests or requests for what they want to see and things like that. So that's kind of a soupy answer, I'm sure of it, but it does kind of make clear that there's no just guaranteed, like, pick this game and you're going to make a gazillion dollars. It's a slog. It takes time. The gold rush of just showing up to Twitch and being a brand new spanking thing and, oh my God, I've never seen something like this before, that is gone. You've got work to do.
Right. Yeah, you've got work to do. Absolutely. And what kind of money are we talking about here when you're doing reasonably well at this? I mean,
you know, I'm glad that you ask. There was a video that went up a while back. A gentleman who goes by the handle Disguised Toast. He does a lot of Hearthstone on Twitch, but has other games that he will dabble in as well. And he did a video. I've just put it up in the doc for everyone to see. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the exact breakdown of money, but it is like about $2,500 a month from donations, $4,000 a month from advertising, $14,000 a month in subscriptions and $20,000 a month in sponsorships. Now, this is a guy who has a lot of eyeballs. One of the top players of a game that is very popular. It's made by Blizzard. It's a card game that you can either play on your PC, on your console, or on your phone. So that gives him, you know, a good opportunity to talk about exactly how much he can make. So donations are just straight up giving bits and giving little each system has a different version of this where you can essentially take your money and just transfer it immediately, usually without the service like Twitch or Mixer taking any cut. Advertising is where a service like Mixer or Twitch will split the cost with you. So you'll get some money because of an ad being played. They'll get some money because of the ad being played. And you as a streamer decide when the ad plays. You can tap a button and an ad will play. Tap that button too many times, you may annoy your fans. Don't tap it enough, you may not make much money. Subscriptions are a different kind of thing where you essentially give a flat amount of cash that then is split between yourself and the broadcasting site. And on Twitch in particular, they give away one free membership a month to every single person who pays for Amazon Prime. So that is giving, it's a $5 gift essentially, but only $2.50 of that goes to the streamer. And then sponsorships, that is the soupier thing that we can go into in a bit. But the short of it is someone will reach out to you they'll just reach out and be like, we're going to give you some money, but you have to do this and this and this. There's nothing built into Twitch or Mixer or YouTube Gaming for sponsorships. That's someone emailing you on the side and saying, hey, man, we want to give you some money for maybe wearing this hat or maybe having this logo on your screen or things like that. And that is a murkier soup that you get to navigate all on your own.
Yeah, there are so many times where people are like, no, I would not sell out, but this seems like the prime place to, like, you know what? Go ahead and sell out. Like, you're playing games and somebody wants you to wear that ball cap and they're going to pay you X amount of dollars to wear it.
Well, and I gotta say,
that's a pretty great place to be at, I would say.
You know, but that the thing about the sponsorships, it is, so the hats and the outfits, those are things that happen. But one of the big things is, hey, I'm a video game maker. I've got a game that no one's heard of. You're a well-known person. Will you play my video game on your time slot? I will give you a ton of money as a result. And the video that is being played right now that I talked about, Dangerous Toast, he's talking about how he will take sponsored gameplay for games he likes. So someone will reach out and be like, I can only give you a little bit of money. And he'll say, sure, because he likes the game. Mm-hmm. Someone will show up with a garbage game and a ton of money. And he'll say, this will make my viewers unhappy.
Yeah.
He has to come up with a balance. So that's sort of an interesting thing once you're up to his kind of level. And you, even if you're a small person and you've got 1,000 viewers and someone may knock at your email door and say, hey man, we'll pay you to play this game you've never heard of. You have to decide, is the money worth it? Or are you going to lose the audience that made the advertiser want you in the first place? And on top of all that, all of these sites have a way to clarify that it's a sponsored gameplay. That, mm-hmm. I'm playing this game because a sponsor has paid me to do it. There are ways to do that within the interface and with text that you put up in a software like OBS.
Got it. Okay, so ad revenue, just real quick here. YouTube, Twitch, Mixer, they all kind of tackle this a little differently. From what I was looking into, YouTube has some pretty stringent requirements. 10,000 plus lifetime views as a start, that turns you into a YouTube partner. And at that point, you can begin earning from views. But I mean, that's a big number to have to achieve in order to even get through that door, right?
Well, there are streamers who just get 10,000 people on a given night.
But they've spent some time to get there.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think that 10,000 is them trying to find that balance between, okay, you're not just some rando creating an account. And I mean, if you can get 200 people to view you per night for, you know, 50 nights, there you go. So mm-hmm. that is kind of part of the slog. Think about that as your goalpost. If you think that you can slog it out to get to 10,000, then you probably know whether or not this is something you actually want to do.
Right. And even once you get to 10,000, like, the amount of money you're probably making at that point is probably not very much. So it's a slog even beyond that. But that's like your baseline slog level, if slog level is a word. Twitch users will achieve a partner status. That's what you're looking for on Twitch. That's where you can actually begin to earn money through ads. That's on a case-by-case basis, though. It really seemed like with Twitch, it's more kind of, I don't know what the determination is, what they see in a particular streamer, but it seems like there's a little bit of a fudge factor.
My guess is they have something very similar to that 10,000 floor or ceiling or whatever you want to call that, with their own discretion to go, oh, this person's getting 10,000 views because they're posting themselves naked or very close to naked all the time.
Right.
And maybe that's not what we want to officially partner with. I can't say. A company like Amazon is very good at creating these sort of soupy things where they don't tell you the exact terms because they want that ability to just kind of toss their shoulders up and say, meh, even though you're otherwise following the apparent rules. So chances are, if you are kind of going by the book, you're playing a video game, you're talking about it, you're being a little bit controversial or vulgar, but not pushing it, you'll probably be fine.
Okay. They also actually have an affiliate program for people who haven't quite made that level but still want to make some money. If you've got people in your chat that are willing to throw you money, they've got something called Bits to Cheer. That's basically chat donations. So who knows? Maybe you can motivate the people who are watching you through chat to throw you some money. And then Mixer has a partner status. There, it's more than 750 followers. You also have to be streaming in 720p resolution or better. You have to have a view count of 50 or more through an entire stream for more than 2 months. So definitely a few more rules there to kind of maneuver around, but none of this is impossible. It just sounds like in all cases, it's going to take you a while. Like you said, it's not the Wild West anymore. It's going to take you some time to establish yourself. And then, of course, sponsorships really seems like the creme de la creme as far as that's concerned. When those subscription rates are high, those brands and those publishers might want to partner up with you. And then I think you're doing pretty all right there. Then I guess your challenge is to maneuver through those and decide which are the good ones to take and which are the ones that are going to turn your viewers away. And I mean, it's that way in live video entirely. If it's sponsored or whatever the case is, it's always a fine line. You got to have a really stringent kind of personal code on what you feel is ethical and what you feel is right, and determine it as you go along. But one thing you didn't mention is merchandise sales. Are a lot of these streamers kind of translating their brands from game streaming into merchandise? I know some, you know, there's some game peripherals that are even built around these streamers.
Well, you've got that tends to be a little bit more on the sponsorship side, where you are lending your likeness, or your esports team, for example,
might
be branding and saying, oh, this is our favorite mouse or our favorite chair. You know, I don't have a gamer chair. Mine doesn't have like sweet speakers on it or anything like that. So if anybody out there wants to give me a really expensive chair that like gives me a pro shiatsu massage and blares music in my face, by all means, I'm on board, you know, ready to sell out. But you know, that's sort of a thing out there. And I believe Ninja is starting to push because he's sort of like an easy default name. I mean, that's such a good name to lock down.
Yep.
It's just in terms of like, oh, right. But there's also a sort of sense of oversaturation. You know, that's a sort of thing to balance. Like, at what point do you become a caricature of what you had been in terms of delivering fame? So, you know, don't expect to get plushy dolls of your favorite merch, your favorite people. But some video games let you get your favorite personality inside of a game. PUBG has some big streamers where you can buy a t-shirt that your little character wears in the game that has the logo of a streamer, and that streamer gets a little bit of that money, things like that.
So that's cool.
So that stuff is all out there. I want to say, though, because pardon me, just this real going off topic thing here. I started writing about video games as a young man at the age of 15, and that was in the 90s, and it was a different time. And it was me looking at the gaming world and saying, I am really interested in this. I am not a coder. How can I be a part of something I love that's about technology and art and blowing things up? And streaming is another sort of chance at that. I think if you are a young person, you have an opportunity to make the barely any money that I made when I was 15 writing about video games. I only made, like $20 an article. You could stream for a night and maybe make $20, same amount of time, give or take. So there's sort of a youth opportunity that you can take game journalism or game criticism or whatever you want to call it in your own hands, whether you stream live or create your own static channel where you're editing together and posting videos that are 8 to 12 minutes that can be watched anytime on demand. Those are paths. You can look at what's out there and say, yeah, I care. I love this thing, and I'm going to put my passion into it, whether you're a 12-year-old, 19-year-old, 27-year-old with that spare sort of time, and just do it. And video will enable you to do certain things that way immediately and build a community. Just remember, becoming part big in these sort of things is about interfacing with the people who watch and care. You have a lot of tools to do that, but keep it about positivity. Keep it about loving the thing you do, and you have a better shot. That's a real a message I just want to put out there, is that everything I did in terms of reviewing games and loving games as a kid was not about being a troll, was not about being nasty, was not about shouting like crazy. And it helped me over time develop people who liked what I did and got me to a point where I get to hang out with Jason and call it work. It's cool. And there are ways to do it, whether it's directly the streaming advice we're giving you or something that's similar like YouTubing or even some other platform that pops up. I don't know. Maybe Instagram stories are a way to talk about games. I'm serious. Look at ways that you can connect video and your passion to the internet at large, and you have a shot. And I believe in you if you believe in you.
Yes. Passion is such, I mean, that's a word that's super close to my heart, right? Like if you follow your passion, so many great things can come out of that. So as long as you're connecting to whatever that is in you, that's going to result in some really amazing things for your life. So if your passion is video games, man, that's wonderful advice, right? Don't do it because it's fun to make fun of other people or it's fun to do that. Do it because you love doing it. And out of that, great things will happen. So awesome advice. Love it, man. That's motivational speak right there. Next episode, next week, we're going to be talking about perhaps the most popular game system of all, and that would be your mobile phone, your smartphones, right? Like, we are now in an age where everyone has a portable gaming device in their pocket because they happen to have a phone that also has some really great processing power in there. And by the way, there's some really great games happening on smartphones. So we're going to spend a whole episode dedicated to smartphone gaming and really diving into that. That is next week.
And I think I'll be in the studio for that one, so that'll be fun.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to transport you magically back into the studio. My hair might be a little bit longer. I can't even remember at this point. Links, show notes, past episodes, subscribe links, everything you need to know can be found at the show page, twit.tv/KH. We record new episodes that will appear in your feed every Thursday. We also play it here on the live stream, twit.tv/live. If we're recording it live or if we've pre-recorded it, it's going to play at 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. By going to twit.tv/live. But really, twit.tv/KH is where you can go and subscribe and make sure that you don't miss anything. Know how we do have a Google Plus page, Google Plus. So search for the community and chat all there. If you go to Google Plus and do a search for Twit, Know How, you're going to find it there. There's nearly 12,000 other fans there participating in the community. So make sure and check that out. As for Twitter, where are you, Sam? Where do you want people to follow all of your stuff?
Sam Red. Easy to spell, easy to type. And then head over to ArsTechnica.com for everything I have to say about gaming, virtual reality, films, TV, streaming, social media culture, so on and so forth. And I am just one of many way more brilliant people than I am who talk about all of those topics and more. So see you over at Ars Technica.
Yeah, Ars Technica is awesome. So many smart people over there, including you, Sam. I include you in that. That's why you're here. You can find me at Jason Howell on Twitter, of course, all over the Twit network, doing shows each and every day. And then we have our TD this afternoon. It is
the Mac and Josh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what do you want? Where do you want people to find you?
Well, I have
you're all over the place.
Yeah, I am all over the place. I have a Nintendo Switch, though, and I just love how simple and easy Nintendo has made it to add friends. So you can find me on there. It's really easy. You'll just remember it, I'm sure. SW38066125-7410.
Oh, you weren't able to get the Macintosh.
No, but this is, I mean, I lucked out, though, to get this.
Oh, yeah, you should change all of your social media presence to that.
Oh, that's a good idea, because this isn't... I know everyone's surprised. This is not a vanity friend code. It's just that cool.
I was really hoping that would T9 to the Mac and Josh.
Oh, man, if we had only had 5 more minutes to plan that out. Well, thank you, the Mac and Josh, or whatever your other name is. I'm not really
quite sure. SW38066125-7410.
And he doesn't have that written down, by the way. That was all off his head. That's it for this week. This episode of Know How is in the can. We will see y'all next week. And now that you know how, go stream for some people. Why don't you? Bye. We'll